awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? Yeah. I'm beloved. Let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness. Don't rush the show.
You got to go with what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. We have first up at 9 o'clock right now, Political Perspectives. We're going to hear Dr. Vandana Shiva speaking on genetically engineered food and the militarization of agriculture. At 10 o'clock, Eric Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints, which features giants of journalism. It's a 1997 recording of reporters Gary Webb, Robert Perry, and Pete Bruton talking about the dangers and the pitfalls of recording on covert actions by U.S. intelligence agencies. At 11 o'clock, KBOO's Janka Soderbergh speaks with former U.S. Congressmember from Ohio, Dennis Kucinich, and his wife, Elizabeth Kucinich, who are in Oregon to speak in support of Oregon Measure 92. At 11:30, we hear Rick Steves, Ending Marijuana Prohibition in Oregon, excerpts from a talk he gave in Beaverton on October 8th. Thank you, KBOO members, for your wonderful and generous support. It's your community radio station, KBOO. Thanks for tuning in, and here we go with Political Perspectives, Dr. Vandana Shiva.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Vandana Shiva, Genetically Engineered Food and the Militarization of Agriculture. Dr. Vandana Shiva trained in physics with a dissertation on quantum theory. Born in Dehradun, India, the daughter of a forest conservator and a farmer, is one of the great ecologists of our time. She has written over 20 books, including Water Wars, Pollution, Profits, and Privatization, Biopiracy, the Plunder of Nature and Knowledge, Monocultures of the Mind, and The Violence of the Green Revolution. Vandana Shiva has challenged for decades GMO corporations such as Monsanto, large hydro dam builders, and governments, including her own, on issues of agriculture, genetic engineering, deforestation, abuses of science and technology, and globalization. She has started a movement from her birthplace in the foothills of the Himalayas and is dedicating her life and creative energy and huge knowledge to what may seem the most humble of tasks, the protection of the seed and the practice of non-chemical, non-pesticide, and absolutely non-genetically modified agriculture. Navdanya means 9 crops that represent India's collective source of food. She founded the organization Navdanya in 1991, and it has grown into a national movement. The main aim of the Navdanya Biodiversity Conservation Program is to support local farmers, rescue and conserve crops and plants that are being pushed to extinction and make them available through direct distribution. They are fighting the theft of people's knowledge by biopiracy and protect food rights in the face of globalization. Vandana Shiva has been the keynote speaker at all Heirloom Seed Expo events since the beginning in 2011. The annual expo is a focus for seed collectors, farmers, gardeners, and their supporters. They are building an international movement to rescue the precious heritage of seeds from being placed in private ownership and then engineered and patented. Often they are purposefully destroyed by an ever smaller number of multinational seed corporations. And they counter the global expansion of laws that make saving and replanting seeds illegal. On her way from India via the San Francisco airport to the Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa in mid-September 2013, Vandana Shiva stopped at Ions to meet with a group of friends. She gave one of her cherished, more personal talks that you will hear in a moment. Ions, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, was founded in 1973 by Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. He was deeply moved by seeing the Earth from space. Shiva had been invited by Sergio Lub, the founder in 1999 of the first social network on the internet. Friendly Favors is built on the exchange of gifts among its members. Now I'm taking you to the small half-round theater space at Ions, with a view over the rolling hills and oak savanna of Northern California. Vandana Shiva had been given 2 hours of rest before her keynote speech at the expo, and she decided to spend them with us. Vandana Shiva.
Thank you, Sergio, and it's nice to stop at this beautiful place. I'm so glad some places on Earth are being protected like this. That's what we've tried to do in Dehradun on our little farm. And I've left a group of 55 people who are there to learn the A to Z of organic farming. We've always offered courses for farmers. That's why we exist. But increasingly, I have one employee of Walmart. He says within a year he wants to leave Walmart and go back to his village and live the real life. No matter where you started, you know, you could start in health, or you could start in spirituality, or you could start in protection of wilderness. We are all realizing that the place where we have to do this work is how we grow our food. And that's because the highest destruction is being done by a food system that's not even feeding people. That's the irony of it. Claims to feed people, but it's not feeding people. I just looked at the data. 10% of the GMO corn and soya goes to feed people. And that against their will, because they're eating it only because there isn't labeling to say, I won't eat this either. If there was labeling, it would be 0%. My own work was really in quantum theory. That's where I trained, that's where I worked. And if I'm doing work on agriculture for the last 30 years, it's because of the violence related to industrial chemical farming. And the wake-up call for me came in 1984. There were three things that happened that year. In June of that year, I remember the date, it was 4th of June. The shrine of the Sikhs, the Golden Temple, was invaded by the army because we had an extremism growing in Punjab. And the Bin Laden of Punjab of that time, his name was Bhindranwale, was hiding in the Golden Temple. Indira Gandhi had promoted Bhindranwale just like the CIA had promoted Bin Laden. Because they always think, catch an extreme person, destabilize the society, and through that you get your control. But you never got control. Because you become victim to your own use of violence and extremism in a way to blackmail society. And then you get... it comes back on you. So by November of that year, Indira Gandhi had been assassinated by the Sikhs. And it's not over yet because they keep squashing the justice issue related to the killings of Punjab. I always say it was 6/9/11s. There were 30,000 killed. Sonia Gandhi is in New York for treatment for cancer. She's got a summons from a New York court because there are enough Sikhs in this country who are continuing that fight for justice. So that was the first. A little later, I heard about a very severe drought in a part of southern India, Karnataka. There was this news item of this many animals die, like the kind of news you had this year on the drought of the USA and the Midwest. You know, I did the first thing you normally do in such a situation. Okay, how much did the rainfall decrease? Because normally a drought is, rainfall is less. the rainfall was just the same. It's 1,200 millimeters. So I said, there's something very strange. The rainfall hasn't come down, but animals are dying and people are migrating. So I sent my team down. I said, go find out. It turned out they had changed the crops. They had gone from the traditional varieties of sorghum, which are very tall. They're tall like Bill and Sergio. Even taller sometimes. But the problem with those tall varieties is which are the indigenous varieties. When you apply chemicals, they rebel. And they rebel through what's called lodging. So traditional varieties can't promote the use of chemicals. So they'd introduced these short varieties, the dwarf varieties. And the dwarf varieties are about that high with a very tough stalk, which doesn't get eaten by animals, doesn't go back to the soil. An old man said, bring me one seed of the old sorghum and it will drive away the drought. Because the old sorghum gave back organic matter to the soil. That held the moisture. You can get the normal rain, but if there's nothing to hold the moisture, it's all going to run away. And you will have drought. So I started to realize there's meteorological drought, which is related to how much rain falls. But there's soil drought, related to how much your soil can hold. And we've kind of underestimated the role of soil, both in soil fertility as well as in water conservation. The biggest reservoir is not these dams of concrete. The biggest reservoir is our soils. And as climate extremes and climate change have increased, we've been doing studies with soil and their resilience. You know, 10, 20, 30% more water holding capacity. 2009, we had a very, very severe drought. And when I traveled to the communities in the drought areas, farmers who had come in to Navdanya for training and were doing organic, they had a crop in spite of the rainfall failure. And those who were waiting for the Green Revolution varieties to get enough rain had zero output. So I realized seed is important. By 2nd of December 1984, there must have been some reason why Orwell chose that as the date for his novel, 1984. 2nd of December, Union Carbide's plant in Bhopal leaked, its pesticide plant. And this gas, because it was winter and the inversion layer was very low, and the gas just moved through the town and killed people, 3,000 immediately in that one night. 3,000. Since then, 30,000 dead. Hundreds of thousands crippled because this gas called methyl isocyanate, it immediately affects the eyes and the lungs. Most of the poor people in the slums work as daily wage laborers, and the women work in stitching. So they couldn't stitch anymore because they couldn't see. And the lungs had gone, so they couldn't, you know, normal thing is you take... My favorite alternative to Walmart is, you know, when they say, but what's the alternative to Walmart? I say, the push cart. Put some staff. And when they ask me, what's your model of the Research Foundation for Science, Technology and Ecology? Such a heavy name that when I was debating the World Bank on forestry issues in the mid-80s, and they had planted a Times article talking about the critique being promoted by this rich woman who has a foundation. Yeah, the foundation was in my mother's cow shed. And when people would ask me, you know, what's your model? I'd say, my model is very simple, a pushcart. If people are having problems with a dam, I do research on dams. If there's a problem with mining, I do research on mining. And then, of course, I had to start doing research on agriculture because of all these events of 84. Last year, I was there for the anniversary, and I was in a hall full of parents with children, crippled children. Because children till today are being born with deformities. So, in a way, the Bhopal disaster isn't over. And every time I hear these noises of warmongering over 200 children, and we don't know who really used the chemical weapons in Syria. Nobody really knows. And whoever killed those children, it's unforgivable. 30,000 in Bhopal killed? That was chemical warfare. So I decided to do a study at the end of 1984. I said, something's so wrong with agriculture. Why is it so violent? And that's part of the problem, that we took food and agriculture so much for granted. You know? Everything else was important, but not that. And we all turned our backs. I turned my back also. So I spent a whole year. Fortunately, I had a United Nations University associateship that time, and I was working on conflicts over resources. And I said to them, I think there's a conflict over resources going on here, and I want to study it. So I spent a year looking at what was happening in Punjab. Punjab was the land where the Green Revolution was first introduced. And it was called the Green Revolution because red was a problem. That time. Red is not a problem. Red is not a problem now because red has become the biggest part of capitalism. It's fascinating, isn't it, how communism is carrying capitalism after capitalism died. So they had to choose a different color, and plants are green, so they called it green. The Nobel Prize was given to it. Nobel Peace Prize was given to it. On grounds that those chemicals will create prosperity and prosperity will create peace. And this is so central to the mythology of the industrial food system that no matter how much evidence we get countering it, it's not allowed to be introduced. So I remember years ago I was traveling with my son to get him to his school. He was joining Rishi Valley. A school started by Krishnamurti, the first school started by Krishnamurti, who also started a school near Santa Barbara in Ojai. And the land there, the landscape is like this, and for centuries, farmers have been conserving water, and it's full of tanks and lakes, the landscape of South India. So my son just commented and said, oh, people here must be starving. He was hardly 7 years old. He said, people here must be starving. I said, why do you say that? He said, because our textbook says, wherever there aren't big dams and there isn't the Green Revolution, people starve. And it's not that it's over. I go to universities and ask, what are you learning about the Green Revolution? They're learning the same thing. Because of this long debate I've had with Monsanto, and I'll come back to that debate, but the interesting thing is every 2 years they find a PR spin master who is zipped around the world to continue the propaganda in spite of the evidence. And they found a young guy from Oxford who claims to be the founder of the anti-GM movement. And I always say, you must have been in the crib. Because the movement started 30 years ago and you're barely 30. Anyway, he came to talk about Borlaug. Norman Borlaug was the man who is associated with the Green Revolution. And he gave a speech and he talked about Borlaug descending to the earth as a god to save humanity from hunger. Now, part of it is Borlaug himself talked that language. Borlaug talked about the seeds as miracle seeds. I would call them deficient seeds because you've taken the store away. The straw is what keeps the food system going. The straw is what goes back to the soil. If you're not giving back to the soil, then for a while you can use chemical fertilizers, but at the end of it, you've got dead soils. He talked about the 12 people he trained to spread this package of chemicals and seeds. He called them his wheat apostles.
12.
Yeah, he picked 12. I'm just waiting to get the time and I need to respond to some of this because they're attacking our parliament, they're attacking our courts, they're attacking everyone with this kind of rhetoric. So we had the Green Revolution, it failed, the farmers were mad, they took to the guns. And the story of Punjab is the story that I studied. Why were the farmers angry? They were supposed to have been prosperous. Well, they weren't prosperous. You can give subsidies for 2 years and 3 years, which is what happened with the Green Revolution. The World Bank said, The US pushed it. The World Bank said, we'll give you the money for the chemicals. The US said, we won't give you wheat. You have to take the fertilizers and introduce chemicals. And 3 years, 4 years later, they withdrew the subsidy, because that's always the case. Let it come for free. It's in a way the economics of the drug pusher. I don't know a single place where the first dose is sold at the price at which it'll be sold later. It's normally just given for free. Try it. Yeah? Once you get addicted, then you pay the full price. And that's what happened with the chemicals and the seeds. Hybrid seeds are first given for free. And because farmers have so many centuries of experience that you grow a crop, you'll get a seed. They don't know a hybrid seed won't give them a seed. No one tells them that. So within a year, they can have a seed famine. Genetic engineering was introduced with only one aim: to be able to get patents on seed in order to collect royalties. This was the project that started in the mid-70s. Actually, the hybrid corn started last century, but Monsanto wasn't in the seed business then. Monsanto was only chemicals, Agent Orange, everything else. They got into the seed business after the finding out of the recombinant DNA techniques, where you could chop DNA from one organism and shoot it into another. And there was a very interesting conference in California in 72 called the Asin-Lomar Convention, where the scientists said, we don't know the consequences. But then the companies jumped in, partnered with some of the scientists, and the moratorium that the scientists wanted got undercut by taking science to Wall Street. Then it became an issue of selling on Wall Street. And you didn't have to have a product to deliver. You sold a promise. So the first GMO was a total failure. There were no movements in California when a tomato called the Flavor Saver tomato was introduced. How many of you remember the Flavor Saver? Yeah? It failed because tomatoes that don't rot are tomatoes that don't cook. Yeah? I mean, I miss a lot with Indian cooking when the older tomatoes, you chop them up. And the normal seasoning is, you know, you put a little oil, then you put a little jeera, the cumin, then you put some onions, and then you put the tomato. And at the end of it, this thing is nice, juicy gravy. But the tomatoes bred today look like salmon after the cooking. They don't dissolve, because they're meant to sit on Walmart trucks for days and days and days. So breeding has gone way out of the cycle of regeneration and reproduction. And the first interruption has been, A, biologically make it impossible to use a harvest to plant the next crop. And the second has been the patent law, make it illegal. You know, because in a way, compared to gardeners and farmers for centuries, who've done such brilliant breeding and given us so much diversity, actually, genetic engineering is very crude technology. In the 80s, when I started the debates with people who were promoting biotechnology, I remember one of the very early debates was with David Hopper, who was then the vice president of World Bank, but before that had been the man in Rockefeller Foundation who pushed the Green Revolution. And he is saying, you know, at 84, I'd done my study on the Green Revolution Punjab, and that's what I was talking about. And he turns around and says, there's nothing to worry, Dr. Shiva. Those toxic soils will be growing GMOs. Genetic engineering will allow us to grow food on the moon in the Sahara Desert and toxic dumps. All they're able to do is two traits, herbicide resistance and BT toxins. They don't know enough about how plants work. They're working in ignorance. And there's a very interesting narrative they have. Because we're working at the genetic level, we are more accurate. Now, because they're shooting genes, they are even more inaccurate. Because when a whole plant is bred with a whole plant, the harmony of the genome works itself out. And they make it look like the whole genome functioning is somehow inaccurate. And when they take a gene and shoot it into a cell in a petri dish, somehow they're being more accurate. They don't even know if that shooting is working, so they have to add an antibiotic resistance marker. So after the shooting, they pour the antibiotic on the Petri dish, and the cells that did not absorb the gene die. Then they take the ones that didn't die and then grow them out. But they have to add another gene for a promoter because there's a tendency of silencing. You know, those genes don't belong to the plant. The plant on its own wants to crush them. So they have to add a virulent promoter. And if you remember when the avian flu spread, the H1N1 virus spread, they found viruses, virus components in it from human genes, a human virus, chicken virus, and a pig virus. And that mixing is happening because we are crossing species boundaries more and more with genetic engineering. And once it's crossed for the manipulation, then disease can also cross those species boundaries. So I got a letter from China at the time of the SARS epidemic. You remember the SARS epidemic? And the scientist wrote and said, because that those days very few of us were writing on genetic engineering, and he says, my assumption is that all the genetically modified soya that's being brought into this country to feed animals, the virus in the soya has interacted with the virus in the guts of the animals, created a supervirus. And then that supervirus has jumped from animals to humans. All absolutely plausible. It happens. When the mad cow disease happened in the UK, the minister went on and said, oh, it's just in the cows, it's just in the cows, it won't jump the species boundary. And there were scientists saying, no, it will. And then the 12 people died with the BSE. That's when they woke up to what was really happening to the animal industry, where they were taking dead cows, grinding them up, and feeding them to the cows. And one of my nightmares, one of the reasons I keep traveling like this and exhausting myself and just keep going, is because my nightmare is these guys are incompetent in bringing us food. And if we don't change track, that's the kind of direction into which they'll push us. And the reason they're so afraid of labeling is because they won't be able to do that work if labeling becomes a recognized right and gets institutionalized in society with GMOs. Because they really want a food system where they can put anything into anything. And for them, the idea is if they don't have control, their scarcity. Now, a seed giving rise to seed is an economy of abundance. But if you want royalties, then a seed giving rise to seed, in their perspective, is stealing.
That was the first part of a talk by India's most famous ecologist. Vandana Shiva is the author of many books. She's a founding board member of the International Forum on Globalization and received the Right Livelihood Award in 1993. Vandana Shiva, Genetically Engineered Food and the Militarization of Agriculture, part 2 of 2. I met Vandana Shiva 20 years ago when I recorded and broadcast the meetings that led to the founding in 1994 of the International Forum on Globalization. At stake was, then as now, the impact of international trade agreements on democracy and people's ability to choose ecology over destruction. We owe Vandana Shiva a huge debt of gratitude for having been one of the first to explain that modern trade agreements are no longer just about setting tariffs at the border, but rather are increasingly global bills of rights that give corporations power over national laws and regulations, all in the name of maximizing their profits. In so-called investor-state suits before unaccountable trade tribunals, corporations can sue governments when they fear that their profits are being curtailed by state laws to protect health, safety, labor, the environment, or other so-called obstacles to trade. And NAFTA, CAFTA, and the World Trade Organization, the WTO, have by now created the multi-year records of the effects of these ever-expanding corporate rights, leading up to the current efforts of pushing through the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I recorded Vandana Shiva on September 10, 2013, at the Institute of Noetic Sciences in the mountains north of Petaluma, California. The small group allowed for a good amount of back and forth. Her answer to the first question combined her reference to the TPP and investor state suits with the plight of one farmer. In 2007, Monsanto sued the Indiana farmer Vernon Hugh Bauman for patent infringement. Bauman had purchased mixed soybean seeds from a grain elevator and planted them for his second planting that year. His case now is potentially precedent-setting since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of Monsanto. Vandana Shiva, genetically engineered food, and the militarization of agriculture. Part 2 of 2.
You know, there's a Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Treaty underway. There's a US-Europe Free Trade Treaty. All these free trade treaties have in them what are called investor state suits. And what this is, if I'm a corporation and I decide all the seeds should be patented and I should be getting this much royalties, and a government under democratic pressure like ours is not allowed to patent everything, we've stopped it. We've put in clauses into our patent law, no patents on biological processes. We just got a patent rejected from Monsanto. Here, poor Bauman, a farmer who bought grain in the market and planted it, not seed. He bought soya from an elevator and planted it. And Monsanto said, you've stolen from us. So this logic is, I can make a trillion if every seed on the market brings me a royalty. But there are people in the world, and democratic governments are supposed to represent the will of those people. And under certain conditions, it still works. So you get a law that doesn't allow royalties on everything, on plants and seeds and generic medicine. Big cases going on in India right now on each of these things. And in all those free trade treaties, corporations are seeking is the right of the investor to sue the state and say, you've stolen a trillion from us. They decide they can make money in so-and-so way. And if they're not allowed to make that money because of ethics, democracy, ecology, etc., then they consider it stealing. So there's actually a case of a company, a Californian company, called Sunbelt. And because of NAFTA, Sunbelt thought, well, we can bring the water now. Go to Canada, they've got so much water. And we'll import the water to California. And the British Columbia legislature discussed the issue and they voted and said, no, our water is not for sale. It's not a commodity. And Sunbelt sued the British Columbia government. Said, we could have made so much money if we had brought this water to California. You've prevented us from making that much money. Now you have to pay us.
Sunbelt Corporation in 1999 was not successful in suing the Canadian government for lost income. However, other investor state suits under trade agreements such as NAFTA or CAFTA have been decided in favor of corporations. The following examples are from a list published by Public Citizen in August 2013. Metalclad, a U.S. waste management corporation, won a $16.2 million settlement against Mexico. A Mexican municipality decided not to grant a construction permit for a toxic waste facility unless Metalclad cleaned up existing toxic waste problems. Ethyl, a U.S. chemical company, won $13 million from Canada over the Canadian ban on MMT, a toxic gasoline additive. Between 2003 and 2004, the U.S. corporations Cargill, Archer Daniels Midland, and Corn Products International all successfully sued the Mexican government for a combined $186 million. That was over Mexican tax levied on beverages sweetened with high fructose corn syrup. They successfully argued that it was unfair that drinks sweetened with natural cane sugar did not have to pay that tax. And one more of a list of 13 from Public Citizen. TCW Group, a U.S. investment management corporation, jointly owns with the government one of the Dominican Republic's three electricity distribution firms. TCW sued the government for violating CAFTA by refusing to raise electricity rates and failing to prevent electricity theft by poor residents. That cost the Dominican Republic $26.5 million in 2007. By 2013, investors collected a total of $405 million in taxpayer money as compensation for lost profits. A member in the audience asked Vandana Shiva how many countries require labeling of foods that contain GMOs.
60 countries. Europe had it from the day of beginning of these debates, which is one of the reasons the US tried to sue Europe in 2003. India, I sued the government, must have been 5-6 years ago, for not having labeling. Though we had no GM crops in India for food, we had the cotton, but we were importing. And the government was ready to pass the law, and then the US ambassador threatened and blocked it for a while. Then we had to build up again, and 1st of January this year, it's become mandatory GM labeling.
Well, the trade agreements were weakening it.
And last year, the US was blocking at the level of trade agreements. So the WTO has three treaties that make a difference to food. One is the Intellectual Property Rights Treaty, which forces the patenting on seed. And through that, in a way, forces GMOs. The second is the agreement on agriculture. And the NAFTA element is what destroyed the corn of Mexico by dumping. Because it's very unequal. You're supposed to open up your borders, but the other side doesn't have to reduce its subsidies. So they can reduce the costs and dump. And that destroys local agriculture, which is what's happened to Mexico. If Mexico's economy is one-third crime, it's because of free trade agreements. And the third treaty is what is called the Sanitary and Phytosanitary Agreement, which is supposed to be about safety. Now, the body that is supposed to look at these standards is called the Codex Alimentarius. And it's got WHO, FAO, and a lot of corporations on it, and usually they push the negative. But because the GMO issue was so important to so many countries that had passed national laws, and they were constantly being threatened in terms of labeling being interference in free trade, last year, for the first time, the United States lost the vote. Codex passed the resolution that no country could sue another country on grounds of free trade for labeling. So now that block's been removed.
I asked Vandana Shiva about genetic pollution and how GMO plants interact with plants that are not engineered.
The first generation of pollution is what we are dealing with in terms of climate change. It is basically burning of fossil fuels and putting pollutants into the air. Originally, we could see it all. Then they learned ways to not have these smokestacks. A lot of it is now invisible, but it's still there. And climate change is all linked to that first generation pollution. The second generation pollution was chemicals. Toxics that were put out, Rachel Carson woke us up to that. The third generation of pollution is tampering with living systems at the genetic level, introducing genes that don't belong to those plants, and then the fact that plants hybridize, the wind blows, the pollinators pollinate, means that these traits that have been introduced then spread
through normal biological processes and normal ecological processes, and then they enter plants where they don't belong. So Mexico didn't have BT corn, but Mexico, which is the heart of the diversity of corn and gave us corn, their native varieties were found polluted with the BT traits. And then Ignacio Chapela did the research and found this to be true, got published in Nature. And after that, things started to not, oh, actually Arpad was the first and then Ignacio. On one of the other militarized systems that Monsanto has evolved is in knowledge. You know, just like you spray Roundup from the sky, here, if a good article gets published in the press or in the media, they unleash a war against that scientist or that journalist. And later it was found out by a British journalist that they use something called viral marketing. There weren't 100 scientists saying this paper is wrong. There was one PR firm manufacturing names of scientists sitting at one computer and dashing off these letters to Nature. And since this has never happened in science, Nature panicked and did something that has never happened before. They said, we withdraw the paper, but you can't withdraw a published paper. It's published. Yeah? They've done that now with Seralini. Yeah?
He had trouble getting tenure.
Yes, and then he did a satyagraha. That's how he got tenure. He took his table in front of the president's office and I said, I'll hold my classes in front of your footsteps. You know, in front of the steps, in front of your office, till you give me tenure.
Where was that?
Berkeley. Yeah. Right here. And Eric Seralini was in the government body to assess safety of GMOs. And then he realized the science was very, you know, they weren't doing enough research. So he said, I'm going to start my own lab. And he started a lab, and he's been doing some of the best work, and he did a two-year study just now. Very high levels of tumors. It's published in a journal on chemical toxicology, chemical and food toxicology. Minutes is published, Monsanto attacks the journal, forces them to appoint one of their men as an editor.
Jesus.
No, so, I mean, when you know the details, I don't want to kill you with all the details. If you know, it's a war out there. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely a war out there.
That was Vandana Shiva at her September 2013 visit to California. The scientists she mentioned, Ignacio Chapela, Arpad Pushtai, and most recently Eric Seralini, have all been attacked or lost their jobs as a result of their findings. Next, Vandana Shiva gave a very interesting answer to the often asked question whether we can change all this by changing a person's mindset.
You know, I definitely think a militarized world is born in the mind. A monoculture world is born in the mind. But once it's born in the mind, argument doesn't change it.
That's true.
Argument reinforces it. Experience changes it. And, you know, one reason we started Navdani, I mean, I didn't intend to have a farm. In fact, I'd sold my mother's farm to finance the founding of Navdania, you know? And then I had to come back to having a farm because a lived experience is the biggest education. And I think one reason the work of Gavin is showing so much promise is the experience of gardening by those who were in jail. That experience for them, they know they don't have to go and shoot somebody or bully somebody or rape somebody to feel something, that they are something. I'm absolutely convinced watching the rapes shoot up in India. They just had one of a photographer now, before that of that young woman in Delhi. And I look at those men who are going into this. Those men, we've created economies for no work for people. Empty minds, empty hands. And then we fill the minds with Hollywood and Bollywood. The violence of Hollywood and Bollywood. Because what do these films celebrate? Violence and sex. And that is the only experience they're getting. So we need to create the possibility of another experience.
That's the Indian ecologist Vandana Shiva. Her most compelling argument was that about the connection of industrial agriculture and war. One of the countries most affected by Roundup-ready soy is Argentina. The Mercola website presents research that, as a result of government policy, more than 18 million hectares in Argentina are planted in genetically engineered soy that are routinely sprayed with more than 300 million liters of pesticides. Vandana Shiva.
And the tragedy of Argentina is so severe because all of Argentina has become a green desert with Roundup-ready soya. And the acreages are so huge, they spray from planes. Roundup, by its very definition, is a broad-spectrum herbicide that kills everything greens it comes in contact with. So can you imagine, I'm a little farmer or I have a kitchen garden, and here's a plane growing over. No one can grow their food. Children, there's a film on a young boy who used to cycle to school daily, and these spray planes used to come over him. And he died with that poisoning. So it is war. It is war of a very serious kind. It's a war because the instruments are war instruments. Most of the chemicals in agriculture come from the war. Even the nitrogen fertilizers were produced in former explosive factories. And they can be turned back into explosives, which is why Oklahoma bombing, fertilizer bomb. Oslo bombing, fertilizer bomb. I was at a dinner in some place, I can't remember, but the very senior U.S. security official was on my table. And after my talk, I came and sat at the table and he's saying, you know, we distributed so much fertilizer in Afghanistan to fight the Soviets. There's so much fertilizer in every village. That's how they're turning it into bombs. Pesticides began as chemicals for the concentration camps. The herbicides, like Agent Orange, were designed for war. That's the challenge we face of reclaiming spaces for democracy and freedom, particularly in vital things. For me, the garden is the place where everyone can begin. So Seeds of Freedom, Gardens of Hope is what we talk about. What are the seeds of freedom? Seeds of freedom are those seeds that can grow into seed on their own, and therefore a farmer can save from a harvest and have a crop without spending money. Because the cost to farmers of this royalty payment and expensive chemicals is so high, since Monsanto entered, it's taken over the cottonseed market in India, 95%. They've pushed the prices up 8,000%. Seed which could be saved every year has to be bought, not just every year, but maybe 2-3 times, because it's not adapted to that climate. It fails very frequently. So very often the cost of seed for farmers is sometimes 30,000% more. How do they buy this against their land on credit? They're told they'll be millionaires, that they'll get so much yield and output, they'll never ever have to worry, they'll pay back the debt very fast. They can't. 284,000 farmers have committed suicide since 1995. It's more than 250,000. Everything else shrinks in proportion. And yet, there is no taking of responsibility. So we try and take the responsibility. We've set up in Navdani 110 community seed banks across the country. We're going to keep doing it till we can. And I'm glad we started when we did in 87. And I started in 87 because I was at a conference where the corporations talked about genetic engineering to take patents and to force the patents on the world through WTO and the trade-related intellectual property rights agreement, which Monsanto wrote. Monsanto wrote it. So they've been at it for quite a long time. Now, they are absolutely confident that they'll write the final script. I am hugely confident that the final script will be written by the cosmos, by the earth, by Gaia, and people who work in alignment with those forces of renewal and harmony.
Vandana Shiva recorded at the Institute of Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California. The last question came from a woman from Mexico. She decried the fact that the Mexican government is supporting chemical agriculture and GMO plantings.
Well, the future of agriculture in Mexico is linked to the future of agriculture in this country, linked to the future of agriculture in India, because the players who are pushing a destructive agriculture and co-opting every institution at the national level for their project are the same players. Monsanto's the problem in India, Monsanto's the problem here, Monsanto's the problem in Serbia, Monsanto's the problem in Poland, Monsanto's the problem in Bangladesh, in Philippines, in Mexico. So I always say thank you to Monsanto for two reasons. I wouldn't have learned any of this if they hadn't been around. You know, I wouldn't have needed to. So I'd have been less informed. And the second is, I think they're the biggest force of uniting citizens worldwide. That's why the march against Monsanto, just some call, a few of us gave a call, and it was so successful, there's going to be a repeat of that march on the 12th of October. And this is very important, because 12th of October is in the week of World Food Day. And World Food Day, 16th of October. 2nd of October is Gandhi's birth anniversary. So we celebrate that fortnight as the fortnight of seed freedom and food freedom. We're telling people around the world, identify the laws that are being made in your area that work against the interests of the earth and the interests of people. Identify them and do what Gandhi did. And we did that with these laws. And we've stopped the kind of laws that make it illegal for people to have their own seeds. I did a satyagraha throughout the country. Satyagraha means the fight for truth. And Gandhi had picked up the salt when the British said, you can't make salt. Gandhi said, how can you stop us from making salt? The sea gives it for free. And we need it for our survival. We'll continue to make salt. We won't obey your laws. Satyagraha is the most powerful force. All of Martin Luther King's movement was inspired by Gandhi and the force of not cooperating with unjust law. Racism was the law. It was legally protected. It took courage to say it's illegitimate and we will not support the laws and the practice of racism. So racism hasn't gone, but legal protection of racism isn't there anymore. So we are asking people to identify what laws. And when I was in Mexico, I told people, I said, if they try and make it illegal to have local corn seeds, don't obey that law. Declare your area seed freedom zones free of GMOs and free of patent laws and free of laws that prohibit the use of local seed.
Vandana Shiva from India, and the campaign she outlined has begun in October 2013 and is designed to become a recurring annual event. Seed Freedom is raising awareness of the current precarious state of the world's seed supply and its consequent threat to food security. The website seedfreedom.in for India provides a platform for people everywhere to take action to protect seed diversity and promote farmers' rights to save, breed, and exchange seed freely, all rights that are now under attack. By connecting seed freedom to Gandhi's Satyagraha and his march to the ocean to collect salt in face of armed intervention by the British occupation force, Vandana Shiva puts out a reminder that the freedom to own and save seed is a human and civil right. That was the conclusion of a talk and Q&A by India's most famous ecologist. Vandana Shiva is the author of many books. The violence of the Green Revolution has become a basic challenge to the dominant paradigm of non-sustainable industrial agriculture. She's a founding board member of the International Forum on Globalization and received the Right Livelihood Award in 1993. Vandana Shiva spoke at IONS in Petaluma, California, on September 10, 2013. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can subscribe to weekly free podcasts and you can get an audio recording on CD. Get information on how to order an audio CD of Genetically Engineered Food and the Militarization of Agriculture by Vandana Shiva by calling 1-707-463-2654. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and on the internet and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keep this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order, or go to TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.
Good morning, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. It's 9:57, coming right up at 10. Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints, which features Giants of Journalism, a 1997 recording of reporters Gary Webb, Robert Perry, and Pete Bruton talking about the dangers and the pitfalls of recording on covert actions by U.S. intelligence agencies. At 11 o'clock, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg speaks with former U.S. Congressmember from Ohio, Dennis Kucinich, and his wife, Elizabeth Kucinich, who were in Oregon to speak in support of Oregon Measure 92. And at 11:30, we hear Rick Steves, Ending Marijuana Prohibition in Oregon. We'll hear excerpts from a talk he gave in Beaverton on October 8th. We have a couple of announcements to let you hear, and then we're going to go right to right to Flashpoints. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO.
Friday, October 31st, Halloween night. Dr. Zom Stereo Obscura, the AV Squad, and Radio Lost and Found present a Halloween radio extravaganza. From 8 p.m. to 3 a.m., it's a horror-filled ghost train ride through frightening sounds, scary soundtracks, ghoulish songs, and other surprises. That's Halloween night this Friday from 8 o'clock to 3 a.m. right here on KBOO. Tune in if you dare.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Muertos Northwest's 6th Annual Celebration Under the Bridge on Dia de los Muertos, Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m. This year's celebration will include the creation of altars, sugar skull decorating, Muertos face painting for all ages, Muertos storytelling, and live music by Los Tex-Maniacs. Again, that's Muertos Northwest's 6th Annual Celebration Under the Bridge, Saturday, November 1st from 1 p.m. to midnight at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
Today on Flashpoints, we present Giants of Journalism, a newly discovered rare 1997 recording of reporters Gary Webb, Robert Perry, and Pete Bruton talking about the dangers and the pitfalls of reporting on covert actions by U.S. intelligence agencies engaged in an attempt to overthrow the Sandinista government. The reporters were interviewed by Flashpoint's executive producer, Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, California, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. In 1997, I had the rare opportunity to sit with three seasoned reporters who had broken major stories that showed the U.S. government and U.S. intelligence agencies working with drug traffickers to overthrow the Nicaraguan government. Robert Perry broke the first stories of the heavy involvement of drug traffickers in helping to illegally support the Contras. Gary Webb showed how the pro-Contra traffickers were selling their top stuff in central L.A. and sending parts of the profits from the cocaine to the Contras. And Pete Bruton broke the story of how the CIA was using failing SNLs to illegally fund the Contras.